Committee on Education for the 22nd of March, 2017. Okay, the first thing we're going to do is open up a... I have to speak before I do this. On Monday, March 20th, Rep. McLean, having voted on the prevailing side, served notice of possible reconsideration of the vote on the committee recommendation for House Bill 2529. In accordance with House rules, a motion for reconsideration is now in order.
Chair Doherty, I move we reconsider the vote on the committee recommendation for House Bill 2529.
Okay. Representative McLean moves to reconsider the vote on the committee recommendation for House Bill 2529. Allow me to explain that this vote is simply a revisit of the final committee recommendation vote on 2529, which failed. Voting aye will return the bill to the committee agenda for further consideration, in the sense reviving the bill here in our committee. Voting aye will not send the bill to the floor. Voting no on this motion will retain the vote by which the bill failed. This motion is debatable. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair.
Or Representative McLean.
I feel at this point that it would be a really good idea to return the bill to the committee. And one of the reasons is because there are some amendments that are being worked on that I believe will actually take care of some of the issues that I had with the bill originally. I think that it helps make this permissive. It helps deal with when folks are actually going to be looking at renewing their certificate. And it's going to allow for more opportunity for choices for candidates for their administrative certificate.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Is there any further discussion? Okay, seeing none, we're going to have a voice vote. Those in favor will say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Okay, the motion carries, and the measure is once again before committee. I will carry over House Bill 2529 for further reconsideration on March 27th, 2017. Thank you all very much. Okay, so with that, we will open up the informational meeting on Ballot Measure 98 Work Group. Representative Wilson, Representative Smith-Warner.
Yes. I think Carl's supposed to go first, so I'm going to wait for him to get down here.
We can hear you.
Okay.
But I'll introduce myself while I'm here. For the record, Barbara Smith-Warner, State Representative, House District 45, Northeast Portland, Maywood Park, and Park Rose.
Hello, Committee. Carl Wilson, House District 3, Grants Pass.
Sure, Mr. Wilson.
Okay, I shall. Madam Chair, and members of the committee, as you know, the work group met last Friday, March 17. We reviewed the four recommendations expressed at the February 8th informational session on Ballot Measure 98. I'll discuss two of them, and Representative Smith-Warner will discuss the other two. There was consensus on the first recommendation that school districts should be allowed flexibility in selecting the areas of focus for expenditure in three areas. These areas included career and technical education, otherwise known as CTE, college-level training opportunities and programs, and then programs aimed at dropout prevention. Work group participants agreed that districts should be given flexibility and required to implement standards, and are required to implement standards. Work group participants also agreed that the grant application process will create sideboards for outcomes and set parameters for programs to ensure school districts are using the money in a utilitarian way. The second recommendation regarding whether to include the allowance of spending Ballot Measure 98 funds on existing programs to supplement existing efforts, as opposed to having districts close and reopen programs, otherwise known as supplant, requires further clarification from Department of Education. Representative McLean met with the Department of Education to clarify the Oregon administrative rules and what school districts can do to spend Ballot Measure 98 monies on existing programs.
Thank you, sir. So the other two areas that we and I would also say that on the second item that Representative Wilson mentioned, that's where we're going to be spending most of the next work group meeting, is on that whole supplement supplant conversation. The other two issues we did some work on. One was the question of small schools and whether we could or should set a floor for those small schools, because there's concern that some of the smaller schools and districts wouldn't get enough to be able to significantly, particularly if they had to do all three areas, do that. I think between, we have not come to a final resolution on that, but between the general agreement about the idea that districts can indeed focus on one or two areas and not all three, and what's already in the rules about collaborations being allowed between districts and schools, we think we're going to be able to resolve that. We are getting a run of numbers on what exactly the small schools are, so that we can be working from information instead of theorizing about what, you know, how much each school is going to get, so we can really see how this is going to be impacted. But we believe we're gonna get to some resolution on that. And then the fourth issue that we talked about, but I would not say, yeah, this is a nice description, but that we have not come to consensus on yet, is the idea of levels, the grade levels at which the money can be spent in the districts. There has been concern that there are schools or districts where they have very robust CTE programs in the high schools already, and they would prefer to use that further upstream in middle school. We had a pretty good back and forth about the intent of the voters, that this measure was about high school spending specifically, and at the same time, the idea that another key decision-making success or failure point is in middle school, the idea of getting these kids earlier. So we had some pretty good discussions about the idea of the measure itself has language talking about between 8th and 9th grade, maybe even some pushback to 8th grade for kind of intro level, here are your CTE options. But I would not say we're quite done with that one. I would say we're leaning towards not going terribly further on that yet. As the language said, we're not quite to consensus there. Our next meeting, and we believe our last meeting, will be this Friday, the 24th. Our first meeting was an hour. Our second meeting was an hour and a half. Our third meeting is going to be 2 hours. I love this. So the goal is that in those 2 hours, we're gonna wrestle through the supplement supplant and kind of review where we are on all four and come up with language requests. We're going to have to any we might believe we have to ask legislative council for if we need to do some statutory changes to implement the recommendations that we will come up with.
Any questions? Representative Vile.
Madam Chair, thank you very much, representatives. Appreciate your work on this. Has there been any discussion about narrowing the list of programs or applications so that we don't have a lot of questions at the district level about what the funds can specifically be applied to?
Yeah, I don't really know how to answer that. We've talked around those issues, but we haven't landed on that specifically yet.
Yeah, I would answer yes and no.
Follow up?
Well, actually, before you do that, maybe Representative McLean was also in the meeting. She's our other representative.
As was pointed out, you know, I was able to meet with the Department of Ed talking about those two definitions and some of the issues around it. And one of the items that Emily brought up is that they do what they call guidance. They do different levels of guidance to school districts as far as, you know, we've passed, this measure has been passed, this is where we are in the process, these are our rules that we've made. And they also then give out guidance on what you can do. And in that guidance, I think it's guidance level 3, that there would be actually some good ideas, or there would be a list of ideas that would help them have more direction on what they're talking about as far as both established and maybe enlarge or expand. And they would give examples in that way if that's what you were discussing.
Follow up, Madam Chair. Yeah, thank you, Representative McLean. I'm just hearing from both programs that are successful currently with various CTE programs and programs that are trying to get up and running, that there seems to be a lot of conversation around things that maybe weren't traditionally thought of as quote-unquote CTE, and making sure that we don't leave the schools with a confusing scenario, and perhaps even making sure that we as legislators give some direction rather than just leaving it up to the department to make those decisions based on what the elected officials are feeling like the interpretation of that bill was, is a good idea.
Yes, Madam Chair, Representative Vile, thank you for the feedback on that. I think that is something that we're conscious of, but I want to thank you for reaffirming that. I appreciate it.
And I would, to follow up, Madam Chair, Representative Vile, I would agree. I think that's a lot of what we're going to end up working on in this last meeting, because those are the kind of specifics about supplements of plant that I think is driving, I think that is what's driving most of those conversations at the district and school level, is figuring out exactly what it is. Because as was pointed out, this is not language that's ever been in state school funding before. This is language that's in some federal, it's around some federal funding sources in education, but it hasn't been in state level funding conversations before. So that's causing some confusion as well.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Other questions? Representative Parrish.
Thanks. In the sort of conversation about supplements of plan, I mean, it would seem to me that the people who drafted Measure 98 would be able to certainly guide us on where they thought that they wanted to go. They sold a campaign to voters around, here's what we intend. How much of that dialogue are you getting from them? I don't know that it's up to the legislature to necessarily make that determination. We had people who drafted that and sent it to the people, so I was under the impression that they wanted us to supplement that when I supported the measure, but I'm kind of curious where their intent is being incorporated into this.
But to be, Madam Chair, Representative Parrish, to be completely clear, that is the folks in that room, it is advocates and it is the folks who are administering, who are going to have to administer it, school boards. It's actual representatives from districts. It is representatives from ESDs. It is a combination of advocates and the folks who are implementing, who are sitting and talking to each other, well, this is what we meant. And then they say, okay, but what about this? Is this what you meant? So it's the opportunity to have at that level of discussion about, okay, what is your read on what this means? Here's how we see it from a district level. Here's how we see it. And the advocates and the writers of the measure say, okay, here's how we saw it. So okay, that's exactly what we're doing.
Helpful. Thank
you. Yeah. And to be clear, that's why most of that is going to be in the last day, because we worked through the other three, I think, more specifically last week, and that that is the one that we're going to come back to and dive the most deeply into.
Thanks.
Okay. Okay, any other questions, comments? Thank you very much. We appreciate
you. Thank you.
You guys taking the lead on this one very much. Okay, so with that, I close the informational on Measure 98, and I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2528. You could go through and tell us what it is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee. House Bill 2587 modifies the state educational goals to consider well-rounded education and liberal arts academics. It ensures that all students can earn a modified diploma, extended diploma, or any other credential equivalent to a high school diploma. It changes the requirement that the public school system has increased learning time to now require it have sufficient learning time. And it includes aspirations in what local schools will ensure to best meet the needs of students and communities. It changes the requirement that 40% of adult Oregonians earn a bachelor's degree to giving Oregon high school graduates the opportunity to attain such degree. It changes the requirement that 40% of adult Oregonians have earned an associate's degree to giving Oregon high school graduates the opportunity to attain such degree. And it removes the requirement that 20% or less of all Oregonians have earned a high school diploma, extended or modified diploma, or equivalent.
Okay, thank you. Representative Evans.
Good afternoon. Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2587, the bill that sparked 1,000 emails. For the record, I am Paul Evans. I represent the people of House District 20, those living in Monmouth Independence, West Salem, and parts of South Salem. There will be people to come explain the major aspects of the bill, but I wanted to kick off today with the why, at least the why I signed up. I am here today because I am frustrated that the emperor has no clothes. Now, as a fairly large fellow, that's not a pretty picture, but what I'm talking about is that we have continued to say that things exist when they don't.
For some reason, I can't get
in. I'm here because I'm frustrated with our current circumstances. As a community college teacher who believes in education, who spent my adult lifetime, with the exception of when I was in the military, trying to teach, I am very frustrated with our collective willingness to enable mediocrity. And I'm here today because I refuse to play the charade game any longer. 40-40-20 is aspirational. It is not operational, at least right now. Let me be clear. 40-40-20 is a goal that's possible. It is a measurable, achievable, rational target that would yield responsible and reasonable ends. What 40-40-20 is not, at least today, is realistic. So long as we fail to fund the quality education model, the model that we've built to support and sustain a meaningful K-12 education delivery, we will fail to make 40-40-20 anything more than a fantasy we tell ourselves. It's a good fantasy, and there will be a number of people I like, a number of people I respect, a number of organizations that work very hard to do the best they can with what they have. They'll come up and talk about the necessity to hold on to 40-40-20. In fact, I believe everyone here today wants the best for children. I also believe everyone here has worked hard to stretch those resources. But if the people of Oregon, if the businesses of Oregon, if the community of Oregon wanted a public school system capable of delivering 40-40-20, we would be doing so. When we said we were going to go to the moon, we didn't only set aside enough money to go to Texas. We set aside enough money and resources to actually go to the moon. For too long, people have been knowingly or unknowingly complicit in the systemic restriction of opportunity. You see, we pass bills that identify, promote, and prescribe a powerful vision for education. I remember SIM and CAM and the framework of Goals 2000. We've been told to leave no child behind, to race to the top, and to focus upon growth modeling. In the 1990s, we established the model, the comprehensive strategy for supporting and sustaining educational aspirations, the quality education model. But instead of finding a way to pay for these innovations, we have decreased the ability of local governments to contribute. We have cut off more than $4 billion over time since 1990 through property tax constraints associated with ballot measures 5, 47, and 50. We all know this. All of us here today know this. In fact, each year our schools are required to report the amount of QEM funding received and the amount that they did not receive. On what planet, in what dimension, is it possible to successfully stand up an aspirational framework like 40-40-20 when we refuse to fund it? Each and every year, we fight over available resources just to get to the existing service level. That's the fight this year. We're not talking QEM. We're talking existing service levels. This bill is here because we must either accept our reality that we cannot, will not, ever attain 40-40-20 goals with the existing structure of support, or we must choose another path. If we want to implement 40-40-20, then we must fund QEM at 100%. We have not ever chosen to do that, and I do not believe there is the will right now to try to do that. It's like this. It is the story of the scientist trying to measure the frog's jump. The scientist brings the frog in, and after a successive series of cutting off legs to see how far the frog can jump, when it gets down to no legs left, the scientist concludes the frog became deaf. And then blaming the frog because it's deaf when he says jump and the frog won't jump.
Yeah.
We are blaming an education system when it doesn't jump to 40-40-20, that doesn't have the capacity to get to 40-40-20.
Right.
So this bill, at least from my perspective, is the beginning of a larger conversation about either figuring out a way to get to full funding of QEM, full funding of something that can get us to 40-40-20, or coming up with something different in the absence of 404020.
Okay, thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. We have got 17 people signed up for this bill, so I'm going to be timing you. And if you have gone through and have submitted a written testimony, I would suggest that you summarize it, because I'm going to give everybody about a minute and a half to make sure, because we have another panel that has another 15 people on it, on another bill. So those of you that know that I'm a stickler for time, so I want to make sure that you keep your time, and I will go like this after about a minute and a half, 2 minutes. But we will start out with, we have an additional person on here, Representative Reardon, Representative Johnson, Senator Haas, and Senator Cruz, would you like to come up also? Okay. So if you could just summarize your testimony, I would appreciate it. Thank you, gentlemen. Roll the dice.
Oh, Matt. Madam Chair and Committee, thank you for having us in here. It's quicker for me to read my testimony than to try to summarize it. For the record, I am Representative Jeff Reardon, representing Souder Southeast Portland, Happy Valley. Today I'm testifying in opposition to House Bill 2587. When you give someone a bow and arrow and tell them to shoot, the first response would be, at what? When there is no target, and there's no purpose for shooting. He could shoot the arrow anywhere, and wherever that arrow ended up would be where the arrow ended up. Not much to it. On the other hand, if you give the archer a target with the challenge to hit the bullseye, everything changes. You now gave him something to aim at, something to challenge his skills against, something to measure his progress with, and something that gives all of his effort purpose just by adding a simple target. I experienced the power of goal setting while working at Tektronix. For the first several years, that division I was in just floundered around making a variety of products, and they did about $60 million in sales. We had a manager coming in the last 8 years that I was there who focused us with like a simple little goal, and I won't bore you with all the details because I could go on for hours. In that 8 year period, went from $60 million in sales to $800 million, and I give credit for having a clear goal that everyone in that division understood, from the top management down to the person that was making products on the floor. Those chair and committee members, clear goals make a drastic difference in an organization's performance. I don't know that 40-40-20 is the right number, or personally kind of like 65-35, but that's not the point. The important thing to remember is that having this goal has been used to frame a variety of very critical discussions, and I'd say those discussions have been very helpful, and the state has worked to improve CTE programs, STEM, college pathways, early childhood, and much more. I don't believe it's a funding issue. It doesn't matter how much money you have. It's where you're going and setting that direction. So I'll close my testimony with one quote from Michelangelo. The greater danger for most of us isn't that our aim is too high and miss it, but it's too low and we reach it. Thank you for hearing my testimony today.
Thank you very much. Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Committee members, for the record, I'm Mark Johnson from House District 52. I'm going to give you some context to see how we got 40-40-20. There was a consensus back in 2011 and 2010 that the state needed to do things differently. Our graduation rates and our student outcomes needed to improve because a better educated population and a better trained workforce were higher wage earners and fewer individuals relying on costly government benefits. And the status quo was simply not getting our state and our students the academic outcomes that they deserved. A group called Oregon Learns was convened to take a holistic look at the public education system and design specific measures that would result in raised outcomes throughout our system. And the result was legislation we passed in the 2011-2012 sessions. And it was this work that resulted in the P20 continuum that we now have in place. It also gave us the Oregon Education Investment Board, who was charged with identifying targeted strategic investments along the P20 continuum as needed in order to raise student outcomes. It also gave us achievement compacts between our school districts, colleges, and universities as accountability measures for student outcomes. And the guiding principle underlining all of this was the 40-40-20 mission goal. At that time, I heard Governor Kitzhaber say on multiple times that 40-40-20 was the North Star. that would guide our public education system. It's the touchstone by which we can measure progress and the driving force behind our policy and funding decisions as a state. And it is the last component of these education, of those education initiatives that we passed in 2011 and 12 that remains with us today. The rest have gone by the wayside for various reasons over the past few sessions. And to consider eliminating the measurable outcomes that are associated with 40-40-20 goals at this time is simply unacceptable to me. Throughout the state, our colleges and universities are actively implementing strategies focused on achieving this goal. In our K-12 world, we are focused on raising graduation rates and providing seamless pathways to careers and post-secondary education in order to reach that goal. Passing House Bill 2587 would be like pulling the rug out from under our public education system and reinforce the opinion that this state simply can't get serious about raising our disappointing academic outcomes. I'd also like to say some words about Section 4.
Are you almost done?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Specifically, the language that would remove the current language and statute that calls for the State Board of Ed to, quote, encourage increased learning times through longer school days or expanded school calendars. Oregon already has one of the shortest school years in the nation. In fact, it's widely known that Washington students will receive almost a full year of instruction more than Oregon students as they progress through the K-12 system. Changing the language to simply encouraging, quote, sufficient learning time, unquote, hardly seems to me to be doing what's best for Oregon's kids. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Haas.
Mark Haas, Senate District 14. I echo the comments made by my colleagues here about trying to keep 40-40-20 into law. This came about as a package of three bills in 2011 where we restructured higher education, changed the legal status, gave more autonomy to these universities, and I think it was the beginning of trying to get more kids into college and out of college on time, and it kind of followed about 10 years of what I would call inertia. And this was 40-40-20 was underlying all of this, and it was recommended first by Dave Frohmeyer, former president of the University of Oregon, late Dave Frohmeyer, and this was a very ambitious goal. Nobody makes disagreement there, and that's what goals should be. They should be ambitious. We all have soft spots in our heart when we hear little girls or little boys say they want to grow up and be a doctor or an astronaut, and we don't try and amend those goals and say, well, that's actually kind of hard to do. Maybe you should set your sight on something else. So that's what this bill, to me, does to the 40-40-20 goal. It's become more than a law. It's become an attitude. We have a thing, for example, where community colleges call this the reverse degree program, where they go out and they say, okay, Representative Evans, you spent 3 years at Portland State. You didn't finish. But you're really close to an associate's degree. If you take one more class and fill out this form, we could give you that degree. And they did that on their own. There was no mandate or legislation. They did that because of 40-40-20. The same is true in Beaverton, where my school district is working on dual credit programs to meet 40-40-20. 40-40-20 is popular there with principals and with teachers. And so I turned in my comments there, and I won't read them into the microphone, even though I know how much you love it when people do that. I just want you to take a long, hard at this. I appreciate the consideration and looking at this education legislation. It's the kind of legislation that's probably more important than anything we do here. And very much appreciate your consideration of this, and I hope that you will ultimately decide that this should stay in your committee.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Jeff Cruz, Senate District 1. I have a different view of this bill. I think this is a good bill. And the reason, quite simply, is that goals are appropriate and nice, but goals should be based on reality. All of the measures that we passed almost a decade ago now have disappeared. And this should be one of them that does as well. If I was going to put a percentage on, I would say that it should be 20-60-20, because if you look at the jobs and you look at the workforce needs, it's community college and technical schools that are going to give the people the ability to find a good-paying job. A baccalaureate degree basically prepares you for more education, and clearly we do need our people to have that opportunity. This doesn't discourage anybody from doing anything, but what this does is allow us to be more focused on the workforce needs and the educational needs of the students to meet those workforce needs. And we know that the jobs available in Oregon today are blue-collar jobs. That is where they are. Those are good-paying jobs, and that's where the focus needs to be. And so I think rather than having something out there that's aspirational, and to say that it's because of 40-40-20 that the community colleges have done all the innovation they have done, or the K-12 system is doing all the innovation they have done, I think is inaccurate. They are doing it because it's the right thing to do. And the education system is moving, and it's moving in some very positive directions. But let's not fool ourselves to think that we need 40% of our students coming out of schools committing themselves to another 6 or 7 years of school, yeah, to find a good place to land in society to make a living and raise a family and have a good life, because that's not really where the emphasis should be.
Okay, thank you very much, Senator. Questions of this esteemed panel? Representative Parrish?
Thank you. So a couple things I hear consistently in this building, but nobody can actually quite give me the information, is if we hadn't passed measures 5 and 50, we'd have $4 billion more in our schools. There's no saying that if we did not ever pass those that the legislature would be funding at the current rate we do. So I'm kind of curious if there's actually some documentation that can show that somewhere, because nobody's been able to ever show me that. The other piece that I'm curious about, and because since we have some budget folks from the Senate side here, if we had done cost containment on health care and cost containment on PERS and do them well, then what's the remaining gap on the QEM? Because if the argument to undo 40-40-20 is because we're not funding the QEM, if we were doing that cost containment piece, how much closer would we be to the QEM? What would we need to write as from this body to fund it so that we could hit a goal like 40-40-20?
Yeah. Those are unquantifiable questions. I don't think those studies exist. And I'm just here to say that 40-40-20 is working, and it's a very aspirational goal, and it's changed the behavior of educators and teachers and students, and it's been a very healthy part to sort of wake up and kickstart our higher education system. And so I think we should let it run its course.
Thank you, Senator. Any other questions?
Could I just add to that, Chair?
Yeah.
Briefly, appreciate the question, Representative Parrish. There's no question that cost drivers are diverting dollars away from students in the classroom. But I would just say about relation to QEM, if this body would at this point in time be funding K-12 at the same level it was in 2005, which was about 44.7 or 9% of general fund, you would be at QEM. That the leakage has happened over these succeeding biennia, where resources have been funneled away from K-12, and that's your QEM.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Evans. Okay, thank you, gentlemen, very much. Okay, with that, as I said, we're going to have a 30-second timer for the next panels that are coming up. We've got Lori Wimmer and John Larson. I'll give you 2 minutes, and I'll give you a notice at each. Yeah, I'm nice. I'll give you 2 minutes each.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. For your record, Lori Wimmer, representing 44,000 members of the Oregon Education Association and requesters of the bill. We are here and honored to speak in favor of House Bill 2587, not because we have lesser ambitions for our students, but because we have broader ambitions for our students. There was a perfect storm in 2011 of high-stakes testing, sloganeering, and low funding that produced a high-pressure environment in which accountability about arbitrary cut scores and student achievement was defined also by arbitrary numbers. Impacts to students included loss of non-core classes, hours and days of over-testing, erasure of such mainstays as middle school social studies, even the loss of elementary recess for the youngest students in some of our high-poverty elementary schools. These are the real-life impacts of ambitions that are shooting too high and when they're underfunded. A few members are here who will tell you more about that as experts on the ground, what they see for their students. So those are the quantity issues. We are focusing more on the quality issues in this proposal. Our teachers have asked us to do so. In researching the genesis of 40-40-20, I saw that the proponents of it had done a masterful job of embedding language, vision, and metrics that they wanted in this latest of many reforms, as you've heard previous speakers discuss. When we argue for more investment in public education, they say, let's just make you more effective. The Oregon Education Investment Board, Achievement Compacts, Rudy Crewe, and 40-40-20 were all part of that. All of the others are gone. This is the last vestige. We believe that we should have a more student-centered, comprehensive educational mission for students. We found it in statute. We've updated it somewhat to include some of the more modern thinking around public education. And its vision is not just workforce readiness. We want to create good citizens, lovers of lifelong learning, and make room for the poet, the welder, the archaeologist, the engineer, and yes, the child who dreams of a career in the military. We also know that this conforms well with ESSA, the new federal law, which replaces the NCLB, which is very similar to the 20 on the end of 40-40-20, because we know that what we want is a more comprehensive educational vision. I have more comprehensive testimony. I'm going to put it in your OLIS system and let my vice president speak.
Thank you very much.
Chair Doherty, committee, thank you for hearing me today. For the record, my name is John Larson. I'm a high school English teacher from Hermiston. I am currently on a leave of absence to serve as the vice president of the Oregon Education Association. If you were to walk into the front doors of Hermiston High School, the first thing that would greet you are six giant coats of arms around our pathways of study. These are all career and technical education pathways of study that many of our students aspire to. Today we heard a lot about goals and targets, but what I would put to you is that 40-40-20 is not an appropriate target, and in fact there is not an appropriate percentage of where students ought to be. In Hermiston, what we look at is we look at what is going to make this student the happiest, the most productive student once they graduate from our school. High school graduation is very important to us. But if you get a chance to visit Hermiston, you should. We have a home builder program where our students build hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of homes each year that they sell. They started from the design to the marketing to the landscaping to the electric to the plumbing. Every aspect of that home, our students are learning about that. And many of our students go into careers in construction. My job in Hermiston was to teach language arts. In the morning, I had AP language and composition. It was a dual credit course where a number of the students were pursuing, wanted to pursue going to a four-year college and university, and that's fantastic. And I did everything I could to get them there. In the afternoon, I taught reading to seniors who read at a third grade level. Those students, one of the things that I'm often asked to do is sub. In other classes. My favorite place to sub is in the wood shop. I like to sub in the wood shop because the same students that I spend a great deal of time with in the writing class telling them, no, you need to do that again. No, that's not quite what I was looking for. In the wood shop, I get to say, that is fantastic. Oh my gosh, how did you do that? And they are so proud of the work they do. We have students who go into the military. We have students that go to apprenticeship programs. And there just is not a single target for those students. We have to be able to allow those students to find themselves, and it's our job to help them get there.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Any quick questions?
Madam Chair, if I could, one last thing I intended to say. We've had some feedback from the post-secondary folks who would really like to be taken out of the bill, and we would be amenable to an amendment that just focuses on the K-12 side.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Okay, the next panel we have is Benny Porter, John Getchell, and Marcia Hill. Okay, thank you. If you want to start, whomever, make sure you identify yourself for
certainly,
the record also
certainly.
When you speak.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and Representatives. My name is Jenny Potter. I have been 24 years in elementary music in Beaverton, and I appreciate the chance to come here to talk to you about this bill. And I want to talk about the why that you started, Representative Evans. Thank you. Over the past 2.5 decades, Beaverton has experienced systematic cuts to its music programs, leaving cut and paste programs of K-12 by 2011. My first story comes from 2008, when music and PE were on the cutting board. At that time, I had a third grade student named John. His passion was music, and he had a remarkable voice.
And you need to sit back from the microphone a little bit so we can understand you. Thank you.
Sure. He had a remarkable voice, and he loved to come to music. He was not academic. He was not somebody who shone in sports, but this was his voice. The same month, I was teaching about Miren Anderson. Miren Anderson is the remarkable, heroic, first African-American vocalist to sing on the Metropolitan stage. She had to overcome racism and loss of opportunity. So how was I supposed to tell my third grade child, John, that Miren Anderson strove for her opportunity, but he couldn't, because there'd be no music? Luckily, the cuts didn't stay until 2012. So we know we have to come with solutions, right? One of the things I want to talk about is the equity. In our middle schools, we see that our ELL kids, they are required to take their ELL class during one of their electives. So here's a kiddo who can reach out for a relationship with another teacher, but instead has to go to their ELL class instead of coming to another elective. We see the differences in languages. One school offers 3 languages, one school offers 1. And the other time that I'd like to say is a solution is can be had. And I want to say how important it is that we are here to be here for our kids, and how important it is that we are here to strive, and they can't wait. Our voices for now, for their aspirations, and for their learning. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Okay, next.
Hello, Representative Chair Daugherty and the committee. My name is John Gottschall. I'm a photography and a social studies teacher at the Arts and Communication Magnet Academy in Beaverton. We're the only 6 through 12 art-focused public school in the state, as I understand it. And I want to relate some of my own personal experiences as would be affected by this bill. I actually want to thank Representative Evans for his talk because what he outlined actually matches my own experience a great deal. My first student teacher that I had about 12 years ago told me that if his first period class in the morning had not been choir, he would have dropped out of high school. He had no interest in the core classes, but he loved choir. And he's now an art teacher at Aloha High School in Beaverton. So that kept him in school. Recently, there's 2 ways to get into my school. We're a magnet, so we're district-wide. There's 2 ways to get in. One is through a lottery process, which accepts half of our students. And the other is through what we call second consideration, where the students come themselves to our school and we meet with them. So I, as a photography teacher, I'm with the visual arts department, and we met with a good number of students. And I asked every single student that I interviewed what kind of art education had they had in the past. The answer was not much. 30 minutes per week was the best that I got out of any of them. I happen to know the elementary art teacher who is at one elementary school, not throughout the district, and she gets to spend 30 minutes a week with each class in a very dumbed down and elemental kind of, she teaches drawing, she doesn't really do art education. These are things that need to get started early. Our music teacher, both classical and jazz orchestra, say they're getting teachers, they're getting students with no background. These are things that need to start early. This is the flavor that makes education interesting. And we're giving them education with not much seasoning, not much flavor, and there's a reason why we have a high dropout rate.
Okay, thank you so very much. Okay, Ms. Hill.
Thank you, Chair Daugherty, and the representatives here. My name is Marcia Hill, and I teach in Beaverton at Cedar Park Middle School. So I've been a 25-year veteran of teaching in Oregon schools as a substitute and a regular teacher. Chapter 1, I began substituting in Portland area schools, Multnomah County and Clackamas County. After graduating from college with a degree in home economics education and vocational education. So the openings in this specialized field were very sparse. So in the early 80s, departments were closing and elective class choices were really limited for students. So life led me to pause my career, skip a few chapters, and years later, I began teaching full-time in the Sandy Unified School District. Well, in those days, the number of elective class offerings were shrinking while the emphasis on core subjects was growing. Measuring students' successes by using standardized tests allow a school, a district, or a state to boast of successfully educating a child. The data was the proof. I received 3 pink slips during the 3 years I taught in Sandy. The third came in a sealed envelope, hand-delivered to me by the principal while I was teaching a seventh grade class. Budget cuts. Chapter B for Beaverton. For the last 22 years, I've taught at Cedar Park Middle School in Beaverton. 17 of those years I spent in C13, the foods lab, teaching hundreds of students how to cook. I love the young teens, the way that they're predictably unpredictable. Mm-hmm. Times changed, and so did the school, and it became an international baccalaureate middle years program school. I retooled and found myself in a computer lab teaching design technology. So by starting with a practical problem, both subjects were similar. Class sizes range from the teens up to 43 in a room. With the school being built in the 60s, the room was converted to 40 desktop computers. I teach 12 separate classes, 350 students, which come in a range of ability levels. Middle school core teachers teach 100 students daily.
Okay, thank you very much. Any quick questions? I do have one comment, and you will appreciate this, as a substitute, since it is coming up next week. I was a substitute teacher on April Fool's Day in the Beaverton School District at middle school. Mm-hmm. So, yes, all the teachers are nodding. They understand. Hey, thank you all for very much for coming down and telling us your stories. We greatly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay. Next panel, we have Andrea Henderson and Greg Hammond. Yes, you can do it. Do it ahead of time. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And we come in with concerns on Section 5 on the bill, particularly as it applies to the 40-40-20 goals for community colleges. So as you know, community colleges are a big part of the Middle 40. And ever since the 40-40-20 was passed into statute, became part of the law, and even before then, community colleges really embraced the idea of 40-40-20 and what it is that we need to do as significant players, really in all three, to help move students forward. Also, as part of the conversation, really moving towards the idea of outcomes as being a measurement rather than just access. And I think for us, the biggest concern with the bill as drafted, as it pertains to the 40 and the 40, is that it changes it from an outcomes goal about what we accomplish with our students and the success of students to an access goal about making sure that we get students in the door. And for community colleges, we've been working too long to change the dialogue from access to access and success. And so we want to ensure that as we're talking about goals at the state level, that it's really about the success of our students and getting them not just in the door, but back out the door. And that really is the key point for us. We'd be very willing to continue to work on this issue and bring back some concrete recommendations in a subsequent legislative session, but any changes overall to the state statute around post-secondary education, we'd like to do in a very comprehensive way that includes our local board members as part of the conversation as well. And so we would hope to continue this conversation with you at a later date. And I will turn it over to one of my presidents.
Well, thank you very much.
Chair Doherty and members of the committee, for the record, I am Greg Heyman. I'm the president of Lynn Benton Community College. I'm also just recently reappointed to the Quality Education Commission, so I have a pretty good sense of the financial issues associated with education statewide. I would like to suggest that frequently our conversations and I come down to I think unnecessarily pitting access against success, and sometimes pitting personal educational goals against the educational needs of a state. And I would like to suggest that when we continue that sort of dichotomization of this issue, we sell our students and our state short. We have very specific education, training, workforce needs in the state, and 40-40-20 is a representation of that need. It in no way should be used to limit the opportunities that students have. And we need to find ways of bringing these issues together and not letting one eclipse the other. I continue to believe that 40-40-20 does inspire us to think more about what we can do for a state, and certainly inspires our institution. And I would hope that we continue this conversation and find a way of more effectively bringing these issues together so we can better serve our students and the needs of our state. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any quick questions?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for coming here and testifying. Okay, the next panel we have is Raman Faramander, John Dustin, and Soren Metzger. Okay, thank you.
Dear Chair Doherty and members of the committee, my name is Ramin Faramanpour. I'm a professor in the Graduate School of Education at Portland State University, where I've taught for the last 15 years. I serve as the chair of the Legislative Committee of the AUP chapter at Portland State University. I am also the Legislative Vice President-elect for AUP Oregon. Thank you for your service and to our state and for the opportunity to testify today. On behalf of 3,400 members of the American Association of University Professors in Oregon and our faculty chapters at the University of Oregon at Portland State University, I'm here to ask that you please support HB 2587. The 2012 American Community Survey of the U.S. Census Bureau reports that 40% of Oregonians have an associate's degree or higher. Topping the list is Massachusetts with 50%, followed by Colorado, Minnesota, and New Hampshire. Compared to other states, Oregon's degree attainment is slightly above the national average. The state's 40-40-20 goals, however, require 80% of Oregonians to complete a post-secondary degree or certificate by 2025, surpassing Massachusetts and other states topping the list. Given that Oregon's disinvestment in public K-12 and higher education persists, the likelihood that the state will be able to achieve these ambitious numerical goals within the next 8 years is slim. To compound the problem, the proponents of the original 40-40-20 schema failed to consider the truth about workforce demands in 2025. According to the Oregon Employment Department's January 2017 report entitled The Importance of Education in the Labor Market, among occupations, the largest of openings will be in the occupations that have low educational requirements and that are low wage. This reflects, to some extent, the effect of job polarization in Oregon. Opportunities for middle-wage jobs may be shrinking, but with simultaneous growth concentrated at the high and low ends. To end, we believe that the scope of the state's public education mission must expand beyond its limited focus on degree attainment by providing students with opportunities and support mechanisms for their intellectual and emotional growth, as well as their preparedness for civic engagement. HB 2587, by focusing on meeting students' diverse needs and not just the imagined demands of future employers, sets a better mission for comprehensively educating our students than the numerical formula it hopes to replace. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Sir? Next.
My name is John Dustin. I'm an Oregonian, Tigard High School, and then I taught at Marshfield High School in Coos Bay, Oregon. This is the first time I've ever appeared in this to speak to my representatives and my, so I really feel like a fish out of the water. It's the first time in my life I've done this, and it's kind of terrifying.
We're not terrifying. We're not scared.
But thank heavens, I put all my real message is in the minutes.
Thank you.
And I don't know what it takes to have people see these minutes, but the story is right here. Mm-hmm. And it's in the second paragraph, the third one. Oregon placed a top in the nation in the sport of amateur wrestling. And that's our kids, that's our farm kids, the kids from Roseburg, the kids from Coos Bay, the kids from Metro. And we have the best wrestling program in the nation. And we did that year after year. And you'll see it right here. Here's the numbers, and here's the states, and here's where they're placing. And so we have our farm kids, our logger kids, our fisher people, and they're the best in America. And we're no longer able to do that. Whole bunch of reasons. One of them is Title IX, but all that means is we got to raise money for the girls because they have to have equal opportunity too, and they deserve it.
Thank you.
And at the time, I was not for women's wrestling. I was not for high school girls wrestling. I wasn't for junior high. But folks, please take the time, and my message is heritage and history. Here's Myron Frank, the guy who started Myron Frank. He started wrestling 103 years ago. So that's our heritage and that's our history. That's my message. And thank you for the time that you've given me.
Okay, thank you. I know Representative Smith from Heppner would appreciate that. His son was state champion last year.
He's excellent. And okay. We have a lot more Senator Smiths. A representative.
Yes.
So we appreciate the support because we're talking to you're talking to farm kids and rural America, and that's the kind of talk that he likes to hear.
Yes, he does. Okay,
thank you.
Soren.
So thank you, Representative, or Chair Doherty and members of the committee. Soren Metzger on behalf of the Oregon School Employees Association. I have submitted written testimony for both House Bill 2587 and House Bill 2693. So in the interest of time, I would like to say ditto what my education, what people before me have actually said, and we do support House Bill 2587. Thank you.
No, thank you very much. Okay, any questions? Okay, thank you very much, and thank you for coming. We weren't too scary, were we?
Did she have her testimony is in there? I didn't see.
It's on our website.
Yeah, sir, if you want to make sure that we all get your testimony, we need to have it in what we call the OLIS system, and so they can help you afterwards making sure that we all get it.
So, Alisa,
yes.
Is it an attachment to an email?
Yes, and it should be on OLIS.
Okay.
I was talking about the OSEA, too. Sorens.
I don't know.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Okay, the next panel we have is Kyle Thomas and Joel Fisher. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Doherty, members of the committee. My name is Kyle Thomas. I'm the Director of Legislative and Policy Affairs for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, substituting today for Ben Cannon, who's on an airplane and could not be here. You have my written testimony very briefly. 40-40-20 is on the top of the mind of the commission as it focuses on what comes next in the student experience once they have the opportunity to enroll in a post-secondary institution and how that experience translates into outcomes that benefit both the student and Oregon. Not only must the state undertake every feasible effort it can to ensure that more students enroll in a post-secondary experience, that is, provide them the opportunity, the goal of the commission is to work to ensure that students that do enroll enter programs with clear pathways that are direct and directly applicable to their career and academic aspirations, that students are supported enough financially and academically such that the problem of student persistence is decreased, that the pipeline is filled with credentials that are coherent and stackable so that students can move up the 40-40-20 ladder while also experiencing the benefits at each rung, and that the state can measure all of these outcomes and effects to understand the positive and negative effects of state policy decisions on progress toward the 40-40-20 goal, which is representative of and a proxy for advancement and success for individual Oregonians. 29 states, as of late 2016, have higher education attainment goals that are intended to increase adult attainment and address workforce conditions in the state. These goals drive higher education planning, lead to the development of data systems to account for student progress, and focus budgets on areas needing improvement. The number of states with targeted goals is growing as states grapple with scarce resources and an increasingly interstate and global competitive marketplace for jobs and opportunities for residents. The 40-40-20 goal should be continually examined and evaluated for its continued appropriateness in serving as a guidepost for state education policy and investment, particularly as economic and workforce conditions change in Oregon and nationwide. However, our statutory goals for education are ultimately defined in package, they should continue to reflect the emphasis they have today on both opportunity and outcomes. And a redefinition of state goals should come after an extensive and inclusive process that involves varied stakeholders, including our higher education institution partners. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Joel Fisher on behalf of the Oregon Business Association and Associated Oregon Industries, two separate associations. We are in the process of merging. We are working together on one shared policy agenda this session. Combined, we represent about 1,800 businesses all across Oregon, both large and small. Here to talk about generally fine with most of the bill, but we have an issue with just Section 5 and getting rid of the 40-40-20 goal. The 40-40-20 goal signals Oregon's seriousness in preparing its young for the higher skill demands of 21st century work and life. It signals the state's commitment to a system focused on outcomes. The goal was adopted with bipartisan support. It's been the North Star. As you've heard repeated, it's the rudder to our ship and is the guidepost by which we have been setting our education policy. It's become a touchstone for business, for the business community, and its integration with government. Oregon's per capita income stands at 91% of the national average, while Washington's is at 106%. And part of the reason for that is that the state of Washington has more college graduates than Oregon does. I want to talk briefly about the growth mindset and the fixed mindset. Some of you might be familiar with the work of Dr. Carol Dweck. She's a pioneer in developmental psychology. Her work is used in professional development in Oregon schools. And what a growth mindset means, essentially, is that when students believe they can become more intelligent, they understand that it takes effort to succeed, and they put in the time and the effort to achieve. Research on the growth mindset shows that if you believe your brain can grow, you can behave differently. 40-40-20 has been Oregon's growth mindset state policy. We've seen our education system change because of this. They've changed behavior, as you've heard some various examples that community college have done. It shows that students really can achieve. And if we leave this goal, we are adopting the opposite of the growth mindset, which is the fixed mindset, which shows the example that we don't think our students can achieve. So we have an issue with just that part of the bill, and we would encourage you to keep our state goal of 40-40-20. Thank you.
Okay, fine. Thank you. Representative Evans.
Thank you, Chair. So for AOI-OBA, the question I have is commitment to 40-40-20. I just want to be very clear. My grandpa used to explain the difference between interest and commitment as looking at a ham omelet. The chicken's interested, but the hog's committed. So is OBA and AOI committed to helping 40-40-20 be realized?
Chair Doherty, Representative Evans, absolutely. We are committed to helping realize the goal of 40-40-20.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Manager. Representative McLean.
And I think that I heard both of you say that you were committed to further conversation and that you were committed to some of the other aspects of the well-rounded education, you know, model and the quality education model that folks spoke to today, but that you really want to have more conversation, especially on maintaining the goal of the 40-40-20. Is that what I heard from both of you?
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, that's correct.
Chair Doherty, Representative McLean, I think that is generally correct. If there is to be a realignment of the goal, it's the position of the HEC that it should come after a more extensive conversation than I think we've been engaged in up until this point.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other questions? Okay, thank you very much. Those are the people we had signed up. And so we can have one more person, but it's going to be like 2 minutes quickly. Thank you. Because we have another 11 on another bill. Thank you. you very much.
Thank you very much. I just returned from the doctor's appointment and didn't get an opportunity to sign in. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Christine Vogel. I'm the Education Policy Coordinator with the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I call attention to our already submitted written testimony. The League of Women Voters of Oregon believes that the government at all levels has the responsibility to oversee and coordinate a comprehensive network of services to maximize students' readiness to be successful in school while optimizing available resources. The League believes that it is the responsibility of government to provide equality of opportunity for education for all persons, regardless of their race, color, gender, religion, national origin, age, sexual orientation, or disability. We support basic education and occupational education. This bill strengthens the opportunity for high school students to pursue technical, academic, artistic, or other pursuits so that all students have an opportunity to earn a high school diploma, the modified diploma, or an extended diploma, or any other credential equivalent to a high school diploma. It also recognizes that CTE, rather than a college degree, is an appropriate achievement for many Oregon high school graduates who have completed apprenticeship programs registered with the State Apprenticeship Training Council. The bill's language modifies the 40-40-20 goals to recognize that the strengths and aspirations of students to pursue a livable wage job, and it will help to address concerns that the percentage of students not graduating now on time disproportionately compromise students with disabilities, students of color, students navigating poverty, and male students. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on this bill.
Okay, thank you very much. Any questions? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, so with that, I close the public hearing on House Bill 2587, and I'm going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 2657 for the purpose of answering any questions. There are two bills that are going to be working today, and so it's just if there's any additional testimony or questions, and Alethea will go through and read and remind us what House Bill 2657 is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2657 establishes an out-of-school youth task force. It charges the task force with evaluating state policies and procedures that have unintended consequences of providing disincentives for school districts participating in re-engagement efforts for out-of-school youth. It has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means, and there's no fiscal or revenue statement available for that version of the bill. There is a -3 amendment which removes the out-of-school youth task force and replaces it with taking the Youth Development Council to develop a statewide plan to provide out-of-school youth with opportunities to become reengaged, and it requires the plan to provide out-of-school youth with opportunities to become reengaged and succeed in education or the workforce, and establishes accountability framework that helps determine success of re-engagement efforts. There is a fiscal impact available online, and there is no revenue impact, but there is a statement issued. And the last public hearing was March 1st, 2017, and this bill does have a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay, so is there anyone else? Because I think we had most of the testimony that came out with this bill. And so is there anyone else to speak on this bill? We had... Bill Hansel, did you want to speak? Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, so with that, since we have no one, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2657 and open up a work session on House Bill 2657.
Chair Doherty, I move to adopt the -3 amendments.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves to adopt the -3 amendments. Is there any discussion? Okay, since there is no other further discussions, is there any objection? Okay, seeing none, the amendments are adopted.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2657 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2657 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Okay, since I see no other discussion, Matt, if you could call the roll, please.
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Aye.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes and the bill is sent as amended to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means. Okay, with that, I close the work session on House Bill 2657, and I open up a public hearing and on House Bill 2649. Alethea, if you could remind us what that is.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, House Bill 2649 requires the State Board of Education to adopt by rule a process for students or other members of the public to submit to the Oregon Department of Education a complaint alleging that a school district policy does not comply or was in violation of that policy. Requires the State Board of Education to adopt rules related to standards for the Department of Education to use in order to determine whether the school district complies with the requirements and develop a process for the Department of Education to review and investigate such complaints. And it requires ODE to develop a system to track the number of reports of harassment, intimidation, and bullying, and the number of disciplinary actions. It requires the department to document this information about the person whom each act of harassment was taken against, including their race, color, religion, sex, sexual orientation, national origin, and disability. It becomes operative on July 1st, 2018. There is a fiscal impact. The fiscal impact is indeterminate. There's a revenue statement which has no revenue impact. And the last public hearing was March 8th, 2017. It has a subsequent referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Okay. Is there anybody else that would like to testify on this bill? We heard quite a few the last time we did.
No, I don't think there's any.
Okay, seeing none, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2649 and open up a work session on House Bill 2649.
Chair Doherty, I move HB 2649 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Hernandez moves House Bill 2649 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Joint Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Vile.
Madam Chair, I'm still struggling on this one with the provisions on in Section 1 on line 15 and 16 that talk about the fact that the policy applies to behavior that takes place on or immediately adjacent to school grounds, at any school-sponsored activity or school transportation or any official school bus stop. As I have tried to wrap my head around the whole concept of bullying as it relates to schools, I'm hearing that this is a much larger issue than what just simply takes place on school grounds. And I'm not sure that we have really addressed the problem by limiting those events to the way that the bill has described them. I would prefer that we did some more work on this to make sure that we captured the extent, particularly the social media extent to which this matter really is affecting our kids.
Yeah, we're hoping that will be addressed by the DOE. Okay, other comments, questions, Representative Solman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. My questions, I think I just wanted to mention that I was concerned about, I totally believe in this bill and support it, and I will be voting in support of it. My concerns were on the reporting mechanism, is to make sure that that is a more simplistic because of our cuts in education and the level of reporting that we are asking our teachers and our staff members to always adhere to. So I wanted to make sure, I was kind of curious about the reporting mechanism. I was encouraged to hear that there is something at the federal level, and this was mostly because the states didn't have that ability to have this data, and how the importance of making sure that this data is available. So I'm just interested in just wanting to say that I'm hopeful that it is a simple process and something that will not be a time-intensive process for our staff and our teachers and staff members. So,
and we have people here from ODE that are hopefully listening to that comment. And looking at it. Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thanks. So I just want to be clear, because maybe I'm just reading this wrong. Is the goal in this bill, because I support the underlying concept, was actually very dismayed the other day to see a school group come and actually witness some bullying happening right here with the group, and had to politely set one of the children straight that that was not acceptable behavior at the Capitol. So the board shall adopt a process for student other member to submit to the Department of Education a complaint alleging that the school district doesn't have a policy. So is it just that I call up as a parent and say, my local school district doesn't have a policy that I think addresses bullying properly so that ODE can deal with that? Or are we anticipating that parents see this as a bill to call ODE and have a complaint because my kid got bullied and I want ODE to do something about it?
I think since this is my bill, I'll answer the question. What it is the whole intent is that ODE will have a process so ODE can deal with the school districts to make sure that they do have a process to go through and deal with bullying, and especially with some of the different more instances that we're getting of cyberbullying, then that's what they would also deal with, the reporting and so on. So the whole idea of it is to go through and have processes for the school districts with the help of ODE to go through and make sure that they have some sort of a process that parents and students can use.
But not to be the receptacle of, the actual complaints themselves, so that ODE becomes the arbiter.
But they may receive the complaints and have to deal with the complaints if the school districts have not dealt with their concern that the complaint that was filed at the very, very beginning with the school districts. If they have not dealt with it, then the ODE would go through and work with the district. So that's the intent of the legislation. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Is there any further discussion? Okay,
I'm sorry.
Okay.
Thanks, Madam Chair. And it also, this doesn't supersede the fact that if districts do have systems in place, this doesn't make them go back through a process. This is just another level.
Right. It's one of those things that they've got systems in place and the complaint has been ignored by the school district.
So
then the parent, the guardian, whatever, has the idea, they then go to ODE and bring this up. So that's what it is. Okay, seeing no further discussion, Matt, could you call the roll, please?
Representative Evans.
Yes.
Representative McLean.
Yes.
Representative Parrish.
Aye.
Representative Solman.
Aye.
Representative Springer.
Aye.
Representative Vile.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hernandez.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wilson.
Aye.
Chair Doherty.
Aye. Okay, with that, the motion passes. And we close the work session on House Bill 2649 and open up a public hearing on House Bill 2693. So if you want to read what it is, and then we'll bring up Representative McEwen.
Yeah, Chair Dorey, members of the committee, House Bill 2693 requires the Oregon Department of Education to award grants to school districts for up to 50% of student transportation costs and costs associated with alternate modes of transportation, including public transit for grades 9 through 12. It allows the Department of Education to review applications and requires State Board of Education to establish the criteria. It establishes a grant amount for school districts to equal the formula relative to include school districts' average daily membership, and it allows the State Board of Education to adopt necessary rules to do so. It does appropriate money from the general fund for this program.
Thank you. Representative McEwen.
Chair Doherty, Vice Chairs, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kathy McEwen. I represent House District 9, Coos Beatty Yahats into Elmira. This conversation started about 2 years ago, maybe a little bit more. As a former school board member for 11 years and a chair who was schlepping children to school for a year when we had no transportation in our district, transportation for students became very important to me, not only as a parent but as a school board member many years ago. And it's a conversation that I've been trying to have for a while about how, as a state, we begin to pull ourselves into the 21st century and have a discussion about the appropriate use of transit in transporting students to and from school, particularly for instruction time. So the conversation started a couple of years ago when I was trying to figure out a way to work through the school funding formula in a way that made sense, that was fair to all districts, but accomplished the goal of allowing school districts some latitude in how we transport them. I pulled together a work group around this issue about 18 months ago, and we've had a very stalwart group of folks who've been working for quite some time. We had some representatives and that were involved. We had people from the Department of Education, from OSBA, from COSA, from OEA, from OSEA. We had the transit agencies represented, and I'm trying to think who else was around the table. Many, many folks, people who just represented transportation for school districts, large and small, to make sure that we had a wide variety of opinions. And this doesn't actually go as far as I would like it to go, but I think it's a really good start in beginning to have the conversation about 21st century transportation for students. With a lot of work, many, many, many discussions, and a lot of compromise, what we ended up coming up with was this proposal, which creates a grant program through the Department of Ed. It allows school districts, as you all know who sit on this committee, the money that the State Department of Ed provides for transportation is reimbursed at a rate of 70 or 80 or 90%, depending on the geography of the district. What this does is provide a 50% match in grant form for a school district who would like to begin to step into the waters of allowing student transit passes to be purchased for their high school kids only grades 9 through 12. I think it's a very reasonable place to start. We would like to begin the program just kind of as a, I'm not going to call it a pilot, because I think this is going to be a program that will stand the test of time and will be integrated, but we'd like to put some money aside for school districts to begin to use it for this and see how it works out. Representative Lively and I spent a great deal of time working on this because of things that he was interested in having done in the Springfield School District. I happen to represent a school district who may never use this. We have a very limited transit service in my community, but we do have children who go from our high school out to the community college to take classes. So it may be possible for some of our students at North Bend and Marshfield High School that they could use this. A lot of the conversation that we had was around how do we open doors for students? How do we not close doors for students? And we know in our urban areas and in our larger metropolitan communities in Oregon, this is already being done, some to a great extent, some to a more limited extent. But we would like to take that next step and open the door a little bit further. If you have a student who does need to get to community college to take a class and they don't have a car or can't be transported, we're creating a barrier. We want students to have opportunities for activities. We want them to be able to... Many school districts don't have activities buses anymore. Mm-hmm. They did when I was growing up. We no longer have activities buses. So would a transit pass allow a student to stay after school for speech and debate or for sports practices or come early to school if they want to be involved in a music program? So is there a way that we can just begin to start allowing this to happen for kids in a way that the goal is to meet that 40-40-20 plan? We want that seamless transition from high school on to college or apprenticeship or community college or whatever training or education they need after high school, and we do that by removing barriers. And I see this as a way of beginning to provide an opportunity for our school districts to again take down some of those barriers, and transportation happens to be one. I think there are people here who would like to testify on this bill. We've had an amazing group of people who have weighed in on this for a very long time. The Department of Education has been very valuable in their expertise in how the Department of Education transportation grant works. So there is a Dash 2 amendment. I understand in OLIS, I'm not sure it's presenting properly in OLIS, but the Dash 1s are no longer viable. The Dash 2 incorporates all of the information that the Department of Education has suggested that we incorporate, and a lot of it has to do with how you clarify qualified vehicles. It's very, very technical, but that's what the Dash 2 amendment does, is it satisfies the ODOT and the Department of Education's need to very clearly define what the vehicles are that are considered available
available for transit. So that's what the bill does. I very much appreciate the committee's willingness to consider this bill, and I think you have some other people who will get maybe more into the detail than me because this is their business. We just want to make sure that kids have every opportunity that they can have to be successful, and I think transportation is something that we may not talk about often enough when it comes to how our students can reach those goals of being successful once they leave public education. So, Madam Chairman, thank you so much for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, thank you. Any questions for Representative McEwen? Okay. Representative Parrish.
Thank you. First of all, I appreciate the thought behind this because I think the transportation issue is just not ever going to go away. But I am kind of curious, you know, this really would impact school districts that have a transit district that could support bus passes and things. Mm-hmm. In our community, for example, if I want to go to the grocery store on a bus, I have to walk 2 miles down the hill from my house, and to get from Tualatin to Westland or Westland to Tualatin to go to Fred Meyer's on a bus is an hour and a half. So we are paying for like TriMet, but we're not getting any good suburban transit. So this feels very like centric to communities that really have good transportation. And was there anything in your work group that came up about how you solve these kinds of issues in other communities?
Yes, ma'am, and it has to do with passing a very robust transportation package that includes funding for transit statewide.
Okay, that's not quite the answer I'm looking for.
Which would increase duration and capacity, hopefully. If you have issues locally, I don't have an answer for you. If it's with TriMet, I think that's a question for TriMet. My goal is to, when it's feasible and when it works, allow for those students to have access. And school districts right now do not have the resources to do so. The reason we did it at a 50-50 match instead of a 70, 80, or 90% match, too, is to just to acknowledge that this is something new, and we want school districts to have an opportunity to try it. It's not going to work in every school district. Like I said, it's not going to work in Bandon. It may work in Coos Bay a little bit. It's probably going to be more effective in places like Central Oregon or Redmond, maybe the Eugene area. They already have their foot in this door a little bit, but if we can incentivize school districts with a little bit of money to see if they could work out something with their transit district and that they could make those runs effective so those students could do some of the things I discussed, like an activity bus run that's not specific to the activity, but that would make it more amenable for that school district to buy X number of transit passes for their kids. It may be a negotiation between that transit district and the school district to see if it could work. So what we want to do is open the door for those negotiations and those conversations to happen. Transit districts, they can adjust schedules. They can add buses. They can change hours. So if the school district can work with that transit district, maybe there are opportunities to make sure that our kids are getting where they need to go. So that's what this is all about.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Representative. Now, we've got like 15 people signed up, and we've got 10 minutes. So what I'm going to do, 15 minutes, I'm going to call Angela Crowley Cook and Edward McGlone, and then we'll start out with the all of the other kids that have signed up, or the young adults that have signed up. Thank you. And everyone's got, you guys got 2 minutes. I'm nice. I'll give you guys a minute and a half. You guys. Because I'm nice.
Okay. Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Angela Crowley Cook. I'm the legislative director at Oregon Environmental Council. I'm going to use 45 seconds, really fast, so we can get the kids to talk. So OEC sat on the transportation work group on that Representative McEwen reference, and we really appreciate that she brought the work group together. This bill addresses a very important need, increasing access for students, not just to get around to school, but also to activities, to work, to community. College. And I'll also mention that the fund created in the bill also can be used by those who don't have really robust transit systems if they do want to have activity buses for other sorts of things that they don't have the funding to do, which we support as well. From the environmental perspective, if fewer parents are driving their kids around, it reduces idling around schools, which contributes to poor air quality and to climate change. Better youth access access to transit also reduces congestion. In fact, travel surveys indicate that 9 to 15% of peak period vehicle travel is due to parents chauffeuring their kids around. So in sum, we support this bill because this is a collaborative approach that meets not only environmental goals, but will also support our students, sustainable economy, and social equity. Thank you.
Thank you. Edward?
All right, Chair Doherty, members of the committee, Edward Nicklone with Lane Transit District in the Eugene-Springfield area. I'll try to be quick. As Representative McLean knows, I was a speech and debate competitor when she was the coach at Glencoe, so I know what 2 minutes looks like, and I know what a look means when it's over. So this bill is in many ways my fault, so if you don't like it, I'm sorry, and if you do, still, that's Representative McEwen's responsibility. I will say that the question Representative Parrish you raised about rural districts getting access was exactly the reason why we had this work group. Last long session, LTD had a bill to restore the Youth Pass program that the state used to fund in our district. At the time, the bill went through Chair McEwen's Transportation Committee, and she was upset because she believed that it did not provide equity of access to folks who didn't have good transit like those in her district. One of the core focuses of the work group that we had was to make sure that this grant program was accessible to any school district in each of Oregon's 36 counties, irrespective of the transit quality they have. And my understanding of the bill and what I was confirming with her staff was that this should allow for school districts to return activity buses if they're not getting reimbursed for that transportation cost. So it's not explicitly public transit. And so that would apply similarly for the Westland-Wilsonville School District as well. So hopefully that addresses some of your concerns. More broadly speaking, we used to have a student transit pass that was funded by the state. When that went away in 2011, of the 6,000 students per day that we carried to and from school, we saw a 5,000 student per day drop. Or, I'm sorry, a 50% drop in that, so down to 3,000 students. What we heard from students when they lost that access to transportation was it limited their ability to participate in extra school, after school activities, and also tutoring. And one student we heard about also had started walking to and from what they felt was an unsafe neighborhood because they didn't have bus access for tutoring. They brought a knife to school to keep themselves safe on the way home. They got caught with the knife and they got expelled. That is what access to transportation for students means and the lack thereof. And so we urge you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. You were within the time limit of a speech competition. So.
We also got a 15-second grace period.
So. I gave you 10.
All right.
Anyway. Okay, we have a whole bunch of kids coming up. I'm going to call up three of you at a time, and then I'm going to say who the next three are so we can get people going. So Tommy Larakis, Annie Vong, and Lexi Moyer, and then on deck is Giselle, Carrie, and Jennifer. So as soon as you're there, and I'm going to give you guys a minute and a half, okay?
Okay.
Let's go.
Hi, my name is Tommy J. Larakis, and I'm a senior at David Douglas High School, which is located in East Portland. And as a student body of like 3,000, and I'm also part of the Youth Environmental Justice Alliance group, which is at Opal. And we've been fighting for youth transit for a long time now. And when we don't have like transportation options beyond the yellow school buses in David Douglas or any other East Portland schools, it makes it hard for us to graduate on time and to get to school on time. And since we don't have any other transportation options beyond the yellow school bus, after school it can be a little bit, I guess, limited to having like two buses since there's a north and a south bus. And I usually take the north bus to go home, but because there's so many kids that populate like the whole entire like school bus, it makes it hard for me. Well, not hard, but it takes like 2 hours for me to get home because we have to accommodate to dropping off so many students around the neighborhood. And the bill is important to me because it can help address the overcrowding that happens in our school buses and allow students to have a flexible and affordable way of getting around to school and attending extracurricular activities, jobs, and other volunteer hours. And I personally ride the bus everywhere I go, whether it's to volunteering, community meetings, or even appointments. And without a youth pass, I wouldn't know where to go beyond this point around the neighborhood to accomplish like so many things that I've done.
Okay.
And I think investing in student transportation would be creating a flexibility, and that's what we desperately need right now. Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Okay, next.
Hello, my name is Annie, and I'm a sophomore at Parkhurst High School in Portland. I am currently a member of YEJA, Youth Environmental Justice Alliance, and I'm here to talk about the importance of having access to public transit and how students like me would benefit from the opportunity, especially students from Parkhurst. So currently, my friends around me are already using public transit to travel around, but the thing is, it eats up their money daily. I know this from experience because they always ask me for money, which I can't provide for them. And not all our parents give us allowances, especially those who come from low-income backgrounds. In Portland, we are the students who currently don't have free youth transit, and it's difficult for us to accomplish our goals. Students have sports, they have club meetings, and school to go to. And we can't always rely on the school bus because it simply can't take us everywhere we need to go. If I attend a community meeting or stay later after school from sports, I would either have to see if my mom can drive or take public transit. Please note that my mom works long hours at a nail salon all the way from Vancouver, Washington. Youth transit is beneficial for students here at Parkhurst, David Douglas High School, and even Gresham. It's a way for students to commute to and from school, and it's a way for students to experience the world on their own. It's a way to foster responsibility. We need to expand the transportation options for young people because our school is ready for it. We need this bill to pass and become a reality because students in the school can't do it alone. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hello, everyone. My name is Lexi Moyer. I am 18 years old, a free and reduced lunch recipient from a low-income household. I grew up in Portland, Oregon, and I'm a co-chair of the Multnomah Youth Commission, which is the official youth policy body for the city of Portland and Multnomah County. First off, I want to thank you for allowing us young people the opportunity to share our testimony. Youth access to transportation is an issue I've been passionate about since I began high school in 2014, and I'm excited to see a bill that will relieve one of the main barriers to access opportunities in my community. Youth Pass is important to me because I use it to go everywhere, and I live in outer southeast Portland, and before high school, I'd always lived within walking distance of my schools. In middle school, my world was small, and I didn't need to have a Youth Pass, but once I started high school, I had to take two buses every morning to get to school and multiple buses to get me to all the places that I needed to go. I use a monthly youth pass to get to my Multnomah Youth Commission meetings, to hang out with my friends, to get to work, to visit my aunt, to go grocery shopping, and to access health care. If I didn't have a youth pass, many, if not all, of these opportunities would be taken away from me. I would not be able to afford a monthly youth pass myself, and nor would my family. But through these extracurricular activities, I have gained immense leadership skills, have made lifelong friends, participated and led social justice movements, and I've opened doors I never thought possible. Access to transportation is more than simply going to school. It is our lifeline to opportunities, and for many of us, transportation by the bus is a necessity. Please support HB 2693, Transportation Access for All Young People in Oregon. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Great job. Okay, so we have Gazelle, Carrie, and Jennifer, and then the last three we have is Sundra, Alex, and Allison.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
May I pose a question while we're transitioning
here? Yes.
And I don't know if the next folks will be able to answer this or not. As I'm sitting here thinking about this, I'm getting a different flavor now for what this bill does. I think youth passes are great, but are we looking at decreasing some transportation costs in districts, or are we adding?
We're adding.
And
okay. Adding, and much of it is for
all sorts of things.
And working with the transit agencies that are in the areas or other things. So that's what we're looking for. Okay. Make sure you identify yourself for the record.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Giselle Lopez Ista. I'm here in support of House Bill 2693. So transportation is a big need in my community in Woodburn, where I've lived for more than 10 years. Transportation is a big need for us because after 2008, when licenses for undocumented individuals were repealed, it impacted the transportation needs of all of our Woodburn communities. Because there are many individuals, including many parents, who after 2008 couldn't drive to work, to doctor's appointment, and much less drive their children around. I live about 2 miles away from the Woodburn High School, and I'm thankful for the Woodburn School
you
District.
I just want to sit back just a little bit. Oh, yeah. It's a real sensitive microphone.
Okay, sorry.
Great, thank
I'm
you.
Thankful for the Woodburn School District, who has the yellow school buses. However, my transportation mobility was still limited. After school, the Woodbury School District offers a school bus, which I rode several times, but I stopped using it because if I would catch, for example, the 4 p.m. bus, I'd get home at 7 p.m., and that didn't work for my extracurricular activities or the college class that I was taking at Chemeketa. The way that I got around was through public transportation if I had money, but most of the time I wasn't able to afford this, so I walked. One day I remember that I had to run 2 miles to school with my jeans and my backpack to catch a field trip bus. And I remember all the times I was walking while it was raining. And today I see the same transportation needs with the youth that I work with in Woodburn. So I urge you to support this bill because by providing transportation access to our low-income youth and our Oregon youth in general, the state succeeds. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next.
Chair Doherty, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Waters, and I'm speaking to you today on behalf of the Transportation Justice Alliance, who expresses our strong support for House Bill 2693, the Oregon Youth Transit Initiative. TJA builds power with low-income communities and communities of color to ensure an affordable, equitable, and environmentally sustainable transportation system. We believe transportation is a human right, and a transportation system guided by environmental justice principles is essential to regional prosperity. The Transportation Justice Alliance is a project of the Native American Youth and Family Center where I work, Opal Environmental Justice Oregon, Community Cycling Center, Asian Pacific American Network of Oregon, ATU Local 757, Latina Network, and the Coalition of Communities of Color. We are led by racial justice organizations and are joined in solidarity by ally organizations The Street Trust, Oregon Walks, Oregon Food Bank, and Thousand Friends of Oregon. Our alliance prioritizes transportation policies that are of greatest benefit to underserved communities and advances them in partnership with community groups, local jurisdictions, and transportation agencies. House Bill 2693 is the right tool at the right time to improve graduation rates in communities of color who have long identified access to transit as a critical link to educational opportunities. It will provide school district increased options and flexibility to address the most vulnerable students' transportation needs. The benefits obtained from this bill would be significant. We know that young people, especially those from lower-income communities and communities of color, need as many options as possible to help them achieve success during a critical time in their lives.
Okay, thank you so very much. Okay. Our last speaker of the day.
Hi, my name is Jennifer Fong, and I'm a youth organizer at Opal Environmental Justice Oregon. I strongly support HB 2693 because our students need this now more than ever. Through our youth leadership program, Youth Environmental Justice Alliance, we know that from our direct engagement organizing that transportation is a key barrier to graduation and success. This bill helps address the barrier by providing flexible transportation for students in every community. In East Portland, where a majority of our student leaders live and go to school, there are a lack of transportation options. Last year, we collected school surveys at Park Roads and David Douglas High Schools. From our 2,500 surveys, we found that at both schools, at least about 50% of the student population use and rely on public transit to get to school and other destinations. This is important because it sheds light to the transportation needs that students have, even though their schools offer school buses. We found that at David Douglas High School, one of the largest high schools in the state, that 41% of the students surveyed said that they had missed class time because they had no other forms of transportation. There should be no barriers to education, and having a transit pass supports low-income youth of color in East Portland schools. We hear from them repeatedly that they need more flexibility in how they get around to school and other programs and extracurricular activities. Parents who have the resources and ability to give their kids a ride to school are helping their students succeed. We as a state should follow their example and do everything that we can to get our students to schools on time, ready to learn. It's good for our youth, it's good for our schools, and this bill is good for our graduation rates and also Oregon's economy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so very much. Great testimony, you guys. Okay, that is the last person we have signed up for this bill.
Sorry, we have one.
Anybody else? It's got to be, you guys, we're actually over time, so I'm going to give you 1 minute. Come up fast. And if you could say your name, because we don't have you on the record.
Hello, my name is Sandra Hernandez. I am the coordinator of Latinos Unidos Siempre, a nonprofit youth organization that empowers youth through civic engagement and other forms of community involvement. And we're here today because we're in support of House Bill 2693, the reason being that 100% of our youth that we serve come from working families. What that means is that their families don't have access to providing money for them to get transportation outside of the school system. And so what happens with that is that youth are limited to participating in after-school activities. And that leaves programs like ours, where we are meant to empower youth to provide transportation for those youth. So it gives us a burden. It gives many programs that empower youth after school the burden to provide transportation and use our own resources so that the youth get to where they have to. And a lot of times we've actually given youth rights to doctor appointments, other important places where they have to get to because they just don't have the access or the money to get public transportation.
Okay, thank you. Sir?
Hello, my name is Alex. I work at Latinos Unidos Siempre as well. I'm going to start off by talking about my personal experience of when I was in high school and how the bus pass that we received was, it felt like a gift from the heavens. I had no clue how we got it. All I knew was that I didn't have to look in the couch every morning for pennies and quarters, or even sometimes hoping when I was in school I would come across some change. And when it was taken away, I was deeply affected, and so were my peers. At Latinos Unidos Siempre, we serve a big population of Oregon who are the undocumented communities. And in 2004, Measure 88 did not pass. So now parents are in fear whenever they have to take their kids to school, pick them up from sports, or take them to the doctors. And if this transportation bill passes, it would definitely alleviate a lot of stress, a lot of toxic stress that accumulates through things that nobody ever has to think about, mm-hmm. like going to the doctor or going to the grocery store for your kids as well. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so very much. Okay, great testimony, you guys. And then, Alex, if you could come up here when you're done, we need your last name, so we'll do that. So with that, we will close the public hearing on House Bill 2693, and we adjourn for the day. 2693, and we adjourn for the day.